Hi, this is Perry, and you're listening to the Chemist Corner podcast for Wednesday, August 17th, 2011. Welcome to Chemist Corner. I'm your host, Perry Romanowski, a cosmetic chemist who is celebrating 1,000 days in a row of joggling. Yes, when I'm not writing about cosmetic chemistry, I'm usually joggling. Chemist Corner is a podcast about cosmetic science and is broadcast to help educate, entertain, and inspire current and future cosmetic scientists. The information and opinions discussed on Chemist Corner are those of the hosts and the guests alone. They do not necessarily reflect those of any past, present, or future employers. Well, hello everyone. Hope you're having a great summer. I've spent some time traveling, enjoying the outdoors, and of course writing about cosmetic chemistry and reading about it too. It's been a lot of fun this summer. Now we're back with another podcast, and we've got all the usual features, including another interview, some cosmetic science news, and a discussion about formulating, and specifically formulating multifunctional cosmetics. On today's show, we're going to have an interview with Desiree Maddox, the owner of Envie Bath. She started her own formulating and consulting business, and we'll get her take on how she did it. But before we get to the interview, let's cover a couple of cosmetic science news items that might affect your formulating efforts. A new study by the AAD, the American Academy of Dermatology, has further emphasized how important it is to use a broad-spectrum sunscreen to protect skin against cancer and the aging effects of the sun. They even say that adding antioxidants to the formula could be a key tactic for future formulations. In research published in the latest issue of the Journal of the American Academy of Dermatology, a journal you should be reading if you develop skin products. Actually, they have some great stuff at the AAD website, so go check that out. Scientists say that antioxidants could help turn passive UV-absorbing or reflecting sunscreens into active protectors. Researcher Dr. Stephen Wang says that sunscreen with UVA protection actually reduces the total amount of free radicals generated in the skin. This would suggest that you should have a sunscreen that will protect from both UVA and UVB ratings. Actually, in the past, people were more concerned with blocking UVB rays because these are the ones that cause sunburns. It's only recently that UVA has become a big concern, and it's only recently that antioxidants were shown to help stop the free radicals that could actually ultimately lead to DNA damage, which causes skin cancer. Dr. Wang also cautioned that while supplementing sunscreens with antioxidants could boost the body's natural defense against UV damage, it is difficult to measure the effectiveness of antioxidants in topical products. This is going to be one of the main challenges for formulators, so that's one thing you have to think about when creating formulas. Another thing you have to think about is that in the U.S., the new FDA sunscreen rules will make it mandatory for manufacturers who make broad-spectrum claims about sunscreen to follow specific tests that prove protection against both UVB and UVA rays. We're going to talk about the new rule changes with the sunscreens in a future podcast, but suffice it to say that the FDA has finally, after 30-something years of promising, come out with some new rules about sunscreen in the sunscreen monograph. This is going to mean that a lot of sunscreens will have to be reformulated in the future, which is good news for sunscreen cosmetic chemists. The next story I found interesting was one that was called Cell-Based Alternative to Animal Testing was Found. This is interesting news for cosmetic chemists who are concerned about animal testing. Researchers in Sweden report finding a cell-based alternative to animal testing that can detect allergic reactions and the strength of the response to certain chemicals. They use laboratory-grown human cells to classify chemicals as sensitizing or non-sensitizing. They also are able to predict the strength of the allergic response. The research can be found in the latest issue of BMC Genomics. They found 200 genes in their human cell culture line that could discriminate between the sensitizing and non-sensitizing chemicals. This data was then correlated with known data about cosmetic chemicals, and that's the basis for their test. You see, so if you study biochemistry in college, it has some application here in cosmetic chemistry. Of course, more work has to be done to verify this procedure, but it is promising. In the EU, they banned animal testing for new cosmetic products and ingredients in 2009, so currently there is no approved way to demonstrate that a product will not result in allergies. This test might help change that. This does demonstrate one of the challenges you'll face as a cosmetic formulator. Often regulators make rules that are ahead of scientific developments. For example, banning animal testing in 2009 probably seemed like a good idea when they proposed it way back in probably 2003 or 2004 or something. But the officials figured by now we'd have alternatives. Unfortunately, there are many animal tests that do not have suitable alternatives. Right now, cosmetic chemists in Europe are now hampered, and it is extremely difficult to develop innovative new formulas because you can't really use any new ingredients. But that is the life of the cosmetic formulator, and research still goes on in finding these animal alternative tests. In today's cosmetic science section, we're going to talk about formulating multifunctional products. One of the biggest challenges a formulator faces is creating products that are different than their competitors. Unfortunately, most cosmetic chemists have to do this using the same ingredients that everyone else can use, and also the public is not good at discerning subtle differences in formulas. I learned this when I tested two shampoo formulas that were vastly different except for fragrance and color, and 14 out of 15 people who tested them weren't able to tell any difference. It was kind of depressing. This is why most cosmetic formulations end up relying on packaging, story, fragrance, and color to stand out rather than their performance. Most cosmetic chemists find this a bit unsatisfying. A strategy that still holds promise for allowing you to make your cosmetic formulation stand out is the creation of multifunctional cosmetics. While there is no single definition to what constitutes a multifunctional cosmetic, there are three aspects of this concept that can impact your formulations. Number one is multifunctional performance. This is the most obvious type of multifunctional formulation. Essentially, you create a formula that will have multiple benefits during one application. So this would include something like a two-in-one shampoo, which combines both cleansing and conditioning in a single product. An antiperspirant is also technically a multifunctional product, as it combines both wetness protection and odor relief. This type of multifunctionality has also been applied to makeup, skin products, hairstyling products, oral care, and many more formulations. For a lot of companies, multifunctional products are really their primary innovation strategy, and it probably is at your company too. One of the ways that you can try to come up with ideas of what to add to your formulas is I'd like to do an exercise I call a mashup. And a mashup is where you take two products and you imagine they're just turned into one product. So what I do is you create a list of different types of cosmetic products and then randomly choose two of them and mash their things together. So, for example, if you picked shampoo and lipstick. You think about a shampoo and it foams, it cleans, it's a liquid. Then there's lipsticks, which is a solid product, and you use it to apply color. And imagine that you combine those together and took characteristics from one and from the other, and maybe you could make a solid shampoo. That would be an interesting product with some new multifunctional performance. So that's just something to try. Try out the mashup exercise. Number two with multifunctional formulated is used to use multifunctional ingredients. But with the push to sustainability and the reduction of compounds, multifunctional ingredients will play a more important role than ever in the cosmetic formulating business. Multifunctional ingredients are those which have dual purposes in a formula. For example, some fragrance ingredients will double as preservatives. Emulsifiers can both keep the formula stable and also thicken the system. They can also have a significant effect on the feel of the end product. So emulsifiers are great multifunctional ingredients. These type of ingredients can help formulators reduce chemical inventory, reduce formula complication, and improve the ease of manufacture. They are also an excellent source of patents, so if you can find a multifunctional ingredient that nobody else has done, this is a great way to get a patent. And the third aspect of multifunctional formulating is multifunctional applications. When I worked at Alberto Culver, we had a product called VO5 Hairdressing. That was the product that actually launched the company. But the marketing department wanted to increase use-up rates, and they thought that if we could find other applications for the product, it would help. So we went through and discovered that you could use VO5 hairdressing for lots of things like removing scratches from wood, stopping squeaking doors, using it as a lip balm, or protecting from chafing, or lots of other things. The idea is that your formulations may have been designed for one function, but if you give it some thought, you might be able to discover other functionality or applications for which the product might also work. So take a thought about your own products and see what other applications you might be able to do with them. Differentiating your products will continue to be a challenge all cosmetic formulators face. You can achieve some real differentiation if you apply some of the principles of multifunctionality. So try that out with your own products and see how you can make them more multifunctional. Desiree Maddox is the owner of Envie Bath & Body, where she is also the lead chemist and formulator. She has extensive lab experience working with fragrances and formulating moisturizers, butters, scrubs, lip balms, color cosmetics, and hair care products. She specializes in natural cosmetics and is available for consulting in areas of contract manufacturing, formulation, and private label business. Welcome to the program, Desiree.
Thanks, Perry. It's nice to be here.
Yes, so I followed you a bit on Twitter, and I know you're also a beauty blogger, but I thought I would have you on the show today to talk about how you got into cosmetic chemistry and what do you think about the job. So why don't you tell us a little bit about your background? How did you get to where you are right now?
Well, it's actually pretty interesting. I've always had a love for chemistry, and I'm also a girly girl. So I felt like being a cosmetic chemist was my ultimate perfect job. Mm-hmm. And I also have a relative that has about 30 years in the industry. So I was kind of mentored throughout my childhood without even knowing that that's what was going on.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah. So it's really been an interesting and fun journey for me. I started my company earlier than I expected to, because when I was ready to jump into the industry, it was at the height of the recession. So a lot of the major cosmetic companies and even the smaller ones were in a hiring freeze. So instead of waiting, I just jumped headfirst into it.
When you went to college, you got a degree in chemistry then?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And what? Tell us a little bit about your company.
Well, I am actually a contract manufacturer for the industry. So I compare myself to a ghostwriter, where I develop cosmetics for companies that are either unable to do it themselves or maybe just don't even have the time to do it. And I kind of work in the background where I develop the products and I manufacture them, and I let the company, other companies take all the credit.
So they get to put their brands on it while you're making the formulas.
Yes.
Now, do you have a laboratory and then a production facility?
Well, yes, I have a laboratory and a production facility all in one, and we're still on the smaller scale, and we do a lot of things handmade, but that caters to the clientele that we have.
Now, it's very interesting. How did you get started with your lab? Like, how did you know how to set that up?
It took a lot of research.
Yeah.
A whole lot of research. So I was constantly on Google and LinkedIn, and I follow the Society of Cosmetic Chemists discussion group on LinkedIn. And I just do a lot of reading, and I try to network with other people that are in the industry so I can learn as much as I possibly can.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what it took pretty much.
Now, you're located in Michigan?
Yes. Yes, I'm in Detroit, Michigan.
Okay, yeah, that's a part of the country which there aren't a lot of cosmetic companies out there, are there?
No, not at all. I'm one of a very few here in the area. There's also, on the larger end, of course, there's BASF is here,
mm-hmm.
and Dow Chemical, but they're like raw material suppliers more so than actual formulators.
Right. I was just thinking of the Society of Cosmetic Chemists. They don't really have There's not really a chapter out there by you, right?
No, there's not. I think there's one in Chicago, which is about 4 hours away.
Right, you'd be part of the Midwest chapter.
Right.
Although Cleveland would probably be closer for you.
Probably.
Yeah.
You're right.
So why don't you tell us a little bit about what you do on the job every day?
Well, I spend a lot of time actually manufacturing products for the clients that I already have. I do a lot of lip balm and lip care products, and I also do a lot of moisturizers and scrubs for the body. And when I'm not actually in the lab, then I'm usually sitting behind a computer screen and reading and Googling and, just learning more about what's going on in the industry. You always have to stay abreast of what raw materials are out and stay in the literature so that you know what kind of research is going on so that you're always ahead of the curve versus behind it.
Yeah, exactly. So it sounds like you've made a whole bunch of different kinds of products.
Yes, I have. I've done hair care, which was fun. Hair care is a lot of fun. It
Yeah.
takes a lot of, it's a lot of thought, and it's a lot more chemistry than some of the other types of products that you do. So I enjoy hair care a lot, and a lot of anhydrous products as well.
Tell us a little bit about your business. How do you go about finding clients and then working on projects and that sort of thing.
I take advantage of social media as much as I possibly can. I've gotten quite a few clients from LinkedIn, just following discussions and looking or scouting what companies or individuals are looking to get started in the industry. And via Twitter, I get a lot of people that contact me to do products for them just from my personality and then with me talking on Twitter about what I do. I find that a lot of people that are in the beauty industry, as far as hairstylists, makeup artists, and spa owners, contact me via social media. So that's pretty much the extent of my marketing thus far.
Yeah, you're a sort of the social network cosmetic chemist out there.
Yeah.
Your blog is called The Glam Laboratory. How long have you been doing that?
I started the Glam Laboratory 2 years ago. I believe February of 2009. And I started it because I wanted to be able to connect with the general public and kind of give them some information and education about the ingredients that are in their cosmetic products. A lot of times people think that, well, they might have a hard time pronouncing a word or knowing exactly what it is. And sometimes when you don't have a chemistry background, you can't really pick it apart. So I wanted to put that kind of thing in layman's terms for people. And also just for it to be a gateway for consumers to learn more about the industry without there being any scare tactics or propaganda, just with the facts.
So, what advice do you have for future cosmetic chemists? Maybe somebody who's in college right now. What advice would you have for them, if they're just getting into the cosmetic industry?
Well, I actually talk to a lot of college students, which I think is very exciting. And the biggest advice I would give is to gain lab experience, even if it's not directly in the cosmetic industry. Once you are familiar with a laboratory in the commercial sense, you kind of have an idea about how things go and what kind of regulations are going on and standards, good manufacturing practices, that kind of thing. And that kind of experience goes a long way wherever you choose to go. Aside from that, I would say to subscribe to the industry magazines and publications so that you can be just as aware of what's going on in the industry as those that are already working there. And you'll find that you learn a lot just by reading the magazines and looking to the people who are leaders in the industry.
Yeah, absolutely. I always took advantage of the free magazines too.
Yes.
What do you like about being a cosmetic chemist? What's your favorite parts?
My fact, it's kind of twofold. I really enjoy being in the lab and being able to be creative and challenging my mind about how to do products that people would think are general or common and making them different in a way that they might work, perform differently, or they have a different feel. I really enjoy that. And then on the other end, as a consumer, I enjoy that I can actually use the products that I make. And I can have my own spa moments at home, or I can play in makeup that I've done myself. So I really enjoy that as well.
Now, have you ever gotten the bug to launch your own cosmetic line?
I consider launching my own cosmetic line. And the reason that I decided against that and actually going into the contract side is because I didn't want to play too much with the branding and the marketing and all that it takes to actually get your product noticed. I like to be able to do the science and sit back and watch how the companies take the product that I've developed and make it into their own, something that they can be proud of as well.
Yeah, that's absolutely one of the things that happens if you launch your own brand as a cosmetic chemist. Then you really have to focus on the marketing and not so much on the formulating.
Yeah.
Well, thanks so much. Now, if somebody wanted to follow you on Twitter, who would they follow?
On Twitter, you can follow my corporate account, which is Envie Labs. That's Envie Labs. Or you can follow my personal account, which is Glam_Scientist. And those are on Twitter.
Great. Well, thanks so much for coming to the program, Desiree.
Thanks, Terry.
That brings us to the end of our show. Thanks so much for listening. One of the things that keeps us motivated to do this podcast is the excellent comments and feedback we get from everyone. I really appreciate it when I get an email saying you've been helped, or see comments or get feedback in the forum. It really does brighten my day. A couple of announcements before we end. First, we're working on the next installment of the Complete Cosmetic Chemist series, and the topic is going to be natural and green formulating. To ensure that we cover all aspects of the subject, we put together a survey to see what you have to say. So if you're interested in learning how to formulate green and natural products, it would help us a lot if you could take a few moments to answer questions on our survey. The survey link is located in the show notes below, so go ahead and click on that. Next, if you haven't seen the free 4-part mini course on cosmetic science, you can do that by signing up for the Chemist Corner email list. Just go to the website, chemistcorner.com, and sign up on the right side. Additionally, you'll get a free copy of the ebook, How to Knock Off a Cosmetic Formula, which teaches you how to copy formulas you might buy at the store. The mini course provides an introduction to the cosmetic industry. It also has a section on science, formulating, and testing. There are 4 video lessons, and you can go watch them right at your computer. You'll get email messages telling you how to do that. Also, I'm going to be giving a talk at the Face and Body Northern California Conference, being held in San Jose on August 27, 2011. So if you're going to be there, I'll be speaking about active ingredients for skin during their Advanced Education Conference program. I've never been to San Jose, so I'm really looking forward to it. But if you happen to be there, please stop by and say hello. As always, please go to the Cosmetic Science Forum and participate in discussions about cosmetic chemistry. We've got over 350 members now, and there are some really interesting topics being discussed. Certainly go there. You can give your own comments, and you can actually start your own discussions. You can get there from the main website, chemistcorner.com. At the top right, there's a button that says Forum, so feel free to click there. If you appreciate the work we do here at Chemist Corner, the best way to help is for you to follow us on the various social networking sites. One of those is Twitter. We're there. You can follow Chemist Corner. And the other one is to like us on Facebook. By you liking us and following us, that helps to boost our appearance on the site, and it helps other people find us, so that helps a lot. Well, that's all I've got, so thanks everyone. Now, go make a difference.